Hello and welcome to episode 37 of the Book Wars Pod. Today we are starting our discussion of Phasma by Delilah S. Dawson. And I would tell from the start to chapter 13 before someone yells at me for not saying that. And if you didn't know by the title, it is Phasma's backstory. So it's very exciting and there's lots of shiny metal people. And Kate had some social... Kate had some social stuff to catch up on before we start the actual discussion.
I am very sorry to at Celestial Intent on Twitter because I earmarked the comments you DM'd in for us to discuss on our wrap-up, and then they totally fell out of my head because I'm great. So we're going to talk about them now. So what she says to us is, I very clearly love both Sienna and Thane, but there were two minor characters that really stood out to me, Kendi and Nash. When Kendi made the comment, good people can start to serve the Empire, but if they stay, they stop being good. Obviously, we know that Sienna struggles with some of the Empire's actions, but she stays, and that makes her complicit. But at the same time, she stays because she wants to build up the good. But does the Empire actually have any good parts? It's interesting how Kendi's statement is both right and wrong at the same time. Then there's Nash, and honestly, I would just really like maybe a short story about what is going through his head during and after the destruction of Alderaan. So those are her thoughts. I would love a short story about Nash and where he went when he squirreled his ass into the First Order and just, like, Jesus. Went crazy. Yeah, because, like, I just want to... Because if I get a Nash story, then I think you get a Ray Sloan story as well out of that, at least a little bit. So, can somebody please write
that?
And,
what's his name's probably there, too.
What's his name?
Hask.
Hask is probably there, too!
I mean, they're all probably aboard the Eclipse somewhere.
Fucker.
I know. So... Yeah, I would love for all those characters to intersect because now we've got a whole roster of people who have joined the First Order. And Hux, of course, is Hux the Elder is one of them, as we find out in
Old Hux.
Yes. Who I called him Ye Old Hux on the fucking outline.
I know, it's pretty funny.
Because I'm making dad jokes. The other thing is that Akrona's point about, does the Empire have any good parts, you know, like, since that's Sienna's excuse for staying, aside from the fact that she can't break her oaths because that's just who she is. Does it really? I don't really know, because it's interesting to honestly be thinking about this now as we're starting Phasma, whether or not the Empire has any good parts, whether it does anything good for its citizens. Let's talk about that this episode a little bit, especially in light of how Cardinal feels about the First Order.
Yeah, definitely. I was going to say that. That seems to dovetail quite well with one of the points I put on the outline.
Woo! Yeah.
We'll talk about that. But before we do that, what are you guys drinking?
Ah, yes. Chris?
I'm drinking Lagavulin Scotch because I'm anxious as fuck right now.
Sorry, Chris.
That's okay. It's no one's fault.
Relatable content.
Right.
I, too, am anxious as fuck. Less anxious today because I was at the beach for the last few days. Impromptu trip, so very
it
nice.
It was poured from a decanter that has my name on it, though. So, living that
life. Who got you a personalized decanter?
Well,
they were groomsmen gifts.
And then he got himself one.
And then I got myself one because they're fucking badass. So, the four of us had decanters with our names on them. It'll make it onto the gram.
Yes.
Okay, good. Kate's drinking tea.
I am. So I'm drinking tea and I'm not drinking actual alcohol because I just popped a Vicodin because we were recording this on the 11th. This past Wednesday, I had surgery. I'm totally fine, guys. Gonna be like back at work and at it like 2 weeks from my surgery date. But for right now, I'm healing because surgery, you know, funnily enough, when they cut you open, it kind of hurts. So Vicodin and alcohol don't go together, so I'm having more of the maple tea. And I somehow managed to get to the last bag of maple tea without taking a picture of the fucking box up on Instagram. So if you wanted to know what the hell it was, sucks to suck, I guess. Sorry, guys.
It's just forever in the ethers of Canada now.
Yeah, I know. Also, I will not describe my surgery because it's disgusting. But if you want to know what it is, you can DM me. I unlocked my Twitter, guys. So you can DM me. Unless you're a dude. If you're a dude, don't DM me. You don't want to know.
thank the maker that you unlocked your Twitter. It makes my life so much better.
You're welcome.
I'm drinking Fort George, where I was at this weekend, as you guys know, is my
one of my favorite
breweries. But we were up in Astoria, so that's where Fort George is. So I would be, it's actually very cool. They have they both have their brew pub. Well, they have their pub where they don't brew, and it's got several levels and a whole top part that they just do pizza in, and it's very cool. And then you cross the parking lot, and it's this whole kind of warehouse. And that's the real tasting room. So, and they always have different stuff on different sides. So, as always, they do a fantastic job with everything. But I'm drinking a Big Guns, which is not aptly named because it's actually just a session. It's 4.2. But it is one of my, it's probably my favorite session. It's very, very good. But yeah, as I belch into the microphone, I have been kind of drinking heavy beers all weekend.
Nice.
If you follow me on the gram, you can see that. Oh, I did have that special beer that I went on about for eons the other week. I did have it on tap, and that I did hear that it was the last keg of it. So there should be a third iteration of that very special beer that I had. Anyway, so thank I was you. Excited about that.
That's really cool, actually.
Nice. Yes. So let's talk about where and when we are, my favorite thing.
Yay! Yeah, so we are really in a place we've never really been before in the Star Wars universe, I'd say, in terms of the Phasma's home planet of Parnassos, which is this weird post-apocalyptic wasteland where they used to have all the cool futuristic shit that the rest of the galaxy seems to have, and then some global warming-ass crap happened, apparently, because the sea is rising, and now they just kind of live like primitive tribes that you would have found on Earth several thousand years ago? Yeah.
Million? Yeah. Sure.
Thousand.
Not million. Million is first hominids. Yeah, first hominids, never mind.
Back when dinosaurs and Jesus roamed the earth.
Oh, fucking A.
That's right, 300 years ago.
What this actually really reminded me of is that I'm playing this video game, and it's kind of similar in that it is a post-apocalyptic world where basically machines have destroyed the earth, and humans have reverted back to primitive societies in tribes and stuff, and it's... Y'all probably heard about it if you've played video games. It's Horizon Zero Dawn, which is my new planet killing game. Keeks. Right. So this is not necessarily it's not a completely new idea, but for the Star Wars universe, it totally is, and that's fascinating.
Yeah, way that I always really heard it described back when this book came out was Mad Max, and I totally see where that was coming from now.
Yeah.
It's a reverse Mad Max, because now there's the seas are rising. And Mad Max, there's no water.
Right, now there's too much water.
Yeah.
At least in the...
At least the spires.
The sire?
The sire, and then they're on, spires.
Spires of rock.
Yeah spires of rock. The sire, yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, I totally do get that Mad Max vibe of, especially with the fact that they can't have kids.
Oh,
breeders. They're that's a whole different...
Yeah.
How the whole point is of Mad Max... Fury Road is trying to protect the breeders, and because they can't, no one can have kids because they're all fucked up. And this one, no one can have kids for whatever reason.
Right. It feels like they get et by animals / don't have enough nutrients to eat anyway.
I think it's the nutrients thing.
It's very Handmaid's Tale in that way, also.
It's very Handmaid's Tale.
Yeah.
Totally. We are also somewhere else because this is kind of a story within a story. So we are also on a Star Destroyer, because when the book opens, we're actually looking at someone named V. She has a last name.
Vi Marotti,
sure.
I read it as Vi. I don't know. Wrong. Is it V or Vi? Kate?
I don't know.
I'm saying it Vi.
Okay, I also thought it was Vi.
So, whatever.
So we actually start with Vi, and she is just kind of like wrapping up a mission for Space Mom Leia, which I'll talk more about later in the outline. But she asks her to like go on, hey, while you're in the neighborhood, check this shit out. And she gets captured by a Star Destroyer, and then someone named Captain Cardinal. Captain Cardinal, is that yes. his rank? Okay.
Yes.
Realizes that she's a rebel, even though she obviously denies it because she's a good spy. So we have her in an interrogation room, kind of off the books, with this Captain Cardinal fellow. And apparently it's on the Absolution Star yes. Destroyer.
Okay, correct.
Cool. Thought it was the Finalizer. It wasn't the Finalizer, but we do see the Finalizer in this book. So.
We should screenshot these notes, just us talking back and forth. Like, because yeah. we're just like, is this the right ship? And I'm like, oh, it's this ship. And you're like, okay, but this is where this person is, right? And I'm like, yes, it's really good.
yes. So, yes. I know. Thank you guys for always helping.
You're the best. we love you.
yes, and that's also where we see Old Hux, and we find out this whole backstory between Cardinal and Old Hux. So we'll get to that in later episodes, but...
Yes. And just to clarify for everybody, we're talking about the Resistance at this point. We are before The Force Awakens?
Oh, yeah. Definitely before Force
yeah,
Awakens.
Yeah, right? Okay, yeah. I was pretty sure, but I just like had a brain fart because I took Vicodin.
Yeah, so it's some point after Bloodline and before Force Awakens.
Yes.
So within that six-year window. And it feels like Leia's pretty established as the leader of the Resistance. So, I mean, I obviously maybe we'll get more context clues as we go on, but it feels like we're 1 or 2 years before Force Awakens
right.
at this point.
The Senate yeah. still feels kind of intact, though, to me.
That's true, but I mean, the Senate was attacked right up until The Force Awakens.
That's true.
Yeah. Oh, I was just going to say, how far through the book are you guys?
I read a little bit ahead. I am in the horrible, 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 scary-ass desert.
Cool. I just read this part.
I'm going to pee my pants about this desert, guys. It's okay, not cool. a fun place. Anyway.
Cool. I read the whole thing, so I'm going to try not to say, I was in Denmark for a while. I needed something to do,
<I'm>
apparently. it's Denmark in the winter.
I'm at the part where the Beatles do a bad thing and somebody has a bad time with them.
Great.
Yeah.
Thank you, Kate. I know exactly what you're talking
about. I don't know.
No. I wasn't being sarcastic.
Oh, okay.
Everybody always knew that Ringo was bad.
No spoilers.
It was a bad Good thing one, that Chris. Happened. It was very.
I was going to say, is no one going to call me on that?
It was okay, disgusting. Fine. What?
The Beatles.
It's fine. He Ringo. Made a he made a very bad
the
joke.
The other Beatles.
What?
The other Beatles.
Kate doesn't like the Beatles. It's fine.
I do like the Beatles. I don't like do. Chris.
twist. So speaking of Cardinal. Chris, you had stuff you wanted to say.
God, what a segue.
Speaking of queer.
Yeah, one thing that really struck me was Cardinal's characterization and particularly his idealism.
And this is kind of tying back into what Adriana wrote in about.
Yeah, exactly. Like, about what is good about the First Order or what was good about the Empire.
Which, and same thing, really.
Well,
point. Okay.
I don't know that I would say that.
Okay.
Because the First Order's not so... Even more so than the Empire.
Okay. Go on.
The Emperor was crazy. The Empire was filled with bureaucrats who were allegedly less crazy. First Order is just all nutso,
okay.
seems like.
Okay.
But anyway, it was just interesting to see Cardinal just be this true believer kind of justification for the First Order that we've never really gotten except for in Hux's, you know, weird... like Hitler speech in Force Awakens
Ugh.
Before Starkiller Base fires, where he's talking about the Republic acquiesces to disorder.
Right.
So ragefully, but...
And through Finn, we get a little bit of how the First Order has built up its army.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's just interesting because Cardinal sees the First Order as being so egalitarian, almost. Like, everybody, you know, there's no bureaucrats and there's no corruption and everybody has... a fair shot to murder people. It's weird. It's like some very, like, back to basics egalitarianism here. It's like fucking Bernie in the Wilderness shit here. It's very odd.
What the fuck? Oh my god.
This doesn't really matter, so I'm just gonna tell you guys. This what makes part of this so interesting, and I can't wait to talk more about this when we keep reading. But we find out later that he's from Jakku. So
I think we know in this.
No, we know that.
We know in this section.
Oh, do you? Okay, yeah. Great. Never mind. Yeah. What
yeah.
do I know?
Yeah, which is, means which means out. We probably met him in Empire's End. He just wasn't named.
Sure. But anyway, it's LOL.
Yeah, but, I know. Like, we see, it's so funny. We see all these different, part of Star Wars is seeing all these people from the same planets being on totally different sides of things. And it's so interesting.
Oh, absolutely.
But yeah.
And I mean, just comparing the First Order to the Empire, though, I mean, another thing that Cardinal loves about it, speaking of his background, is that, you know, military service is the thing that got him off Jakku. You know, he's instead of just being some random orphan kid on trash sand planet, he is now Captain Cardinal. He's well, he was more important a little while ago before his Phasma got there, but he's pretty fucking important, and you know, he has a great life. And you know, he says at some point when he's getting some food rations for Vi, and she's like, this tastes like shit, and he's just like, do you want to try like eating garbage on Jakku, because that was my childhood, this tastes great to me,
right?
That kind of thing. And you know, he loves that the kids he trains, like, he feels like they've been lifted out of poverty and these horrible lives. And that's kind of also what the Empire was, at least for Sienna and Thane. It was a chance for them to get off planet and leave behind their backwater world. And I mean, they're not the only ones who felt that way. Otherwise, there are tons of people who would never have joined up.
Oh, for sure. And I mean, he's very clearly a true believer recruiter. Like, he played the America's Army video game. He went and saw 12 Strong on opening night.
Oh my
like,
god.
He is into the propaganda.
Chris, why do you have to be like this?
Oh my god.
Sorry.
You're not, don't be sorry. Don't be sorry.
I know. Obviously I'm cranky, because usually I don't shit on Chris that specifically.
But his view of kind of the decadence and the corruption of the Republic is a little, to me, was kind of reminiscent of Anakin in Attack of the Clones, when he's, you know, describing his ideal system where people just decide what to do and they do it because politics. But like, where Anakin was like, you know, there's so much bickering and nothing ever gets done. And, you know, he doesn't trust politicians, and he kind of does believe in a dictatorship, and Cardinal very clearly does as well. And also all of Phantom Menace, and just the general frustration with the bureaucrats in the Senate and like all this shit. Like, sorry, I'm like on something tonight. I don't even know.
We're all on something tonight. It's fine. Well, I'm literally.
Kate is literally on something. Yeah. Yeah. But yeah, so it's interesting to kind of get that view of the New Republic. Like, it's, you know, meet the New Republic, same as the Old Republic.
Mm-hmm.
I'm very 1960s, 1970s themed today.
Okay.
Yes.
That was a Who reference, Kate.
Oh my god.
Huh?
That was a reference to The Who.
Oh.
The Who's 1970 something hit song Won't Get Fooled Again.
I've actually never heard love, that song.
Oh, it's great.
It's a quality song. I love when Chris explains his. But
she legitimately didn't know that one. I was responding to the confusion on her face.
So, speaking of Anakin, and he's a Jedi, sure.
Flawless.
Oh,
nobody can tell that we just had a whole aside that got edited out.
Oh my gosh.
Flawless introduction, geeks. No, I, for one, it's amazing.
Oh, God.
Kate, did you want to talk about kitty snatching?
I sure did want to talk about
that. That's why I used that flawless transition.
Oh, my goodness. So one of the interesting things that I noticed just in this first section that we read is that through Cardinal, we're getting this very interesting twisted view of the Empire and the First Order as being representative of hope, again, for a lot of the kids who are indoctrinated as stormtroopers, and they're lifted out of poverty or kidnapped or, you know, what fucking ever, which is... It was just a fascinating thing for me to take note of, because obviously, you know, we have the very famous Leia line that the rebellion and now the resistance are made of people who are hopeful. That's exactly what they're fighting for, and the thing that keeps them going. And then to have Cardinal just be like, no, we're just gonna restore order to the galaxy, and that's what's gonna fix things. And I was just kind of like, oh god, it was just kind of like, it's a thing that's been not necessarily evident, but it's been sort of hinted at in previous books that we've read, especially from the Imperial point of view, but it's really, really apparent here, and I thought that was interesting. And the other thing, of course, is, as Keek so eloquently introduced this topic, like I said, the First Order is known for just taking kids to make them stormtroopers. They don't use a clone army. They're all their recruits are indoctrinated basically from birth. And Finn himself says in The Force Awakens, I was taken from a family I'll never know to do one thing. And it's obviously the families in the case of the First Order, they're not really given a choice. I assume that their kids just get rounded up and hoarded onto a ship, and then there begins their death training. However, we don't really know whether parents had a choice and whether or not the kids became Jedi. This is a thing we talked about a few episodes ago, and I don't remember which one.
It was many episodes ago, I believe.
Yeah, I remember talking about it. I think we landed on the parents did not have a choice.
Well, it wasn't many episodes ago. Sorry, Kate, I didn't mean to be an asshole. I think it was what we were talking about from a certain point of view.
God, Kristen.
Fuck you, Chris.
Oh my god. Jesus Christ. Okay, you two are out of control. This is fine.
To kind of build off that, I think that's a really good point in that, you know, the First Order are snatching children. They're snatching children in the night, and it seems so awful.
And that was a legend about the Jedi that we had during the Age of the Empires, that they, you know, they kidnap kids and they...
And yeah. We don't know how incorrect that was. Because it doesn't feel like it could be. It doesn't feel like it could be optional. If your kid's force sensitive, I don't think the Jedi would risk that kid becoming a Sith because they didn't grow up with instruction.
Right.
So I feel like your kid is being taken to the Jedi Temple whether you like it or not, and you're never going to see them again.
Right.
There's so much more we want to know. I mean, we did talk about this, but there's so much more I want to know about this that we're probably never going to hear.
Well, because, you know, they should never revisit the Old Republic ever because we had KOTOR. This is my hill to die on this week.
It's fine. We don't have to talk about it in the pod. You can just talk about it on Twitter.
Yeah, just follow me at Chris Cedor on Twitter for salty Star Wars takes.
Follow all of us for salty Star Wars takes, TBH, and the Book Wars pod. Kate runs.
It is. I try to be less salty on there. Except for yesterday when Funko Pop came out with the design for their new Padme Funko, and it was again her fucking Geonosis costume where she's like half naked, and they were like, let us know what you'd like to see Funko make next. And longtime listener at Avenger at Heart, who is a wonderful person, replied, and she was just like, literally any Padme without the fucking Geonosis costume. And I was just like, I love you so much.
The magical disappearing Geonosis costume.
Yep. Every time we look at her, she's wearing less clothes.
No, literally every screen cut, like, listeners, go back and watch. I know it hurts. Go back and watch Attack of the Clones. You only have to watch this scene. But every screen cut, Padme loses a piece of that shirt.
Yes.
And it's never clear where.
It's so messed up.
It starts as, like, a fucking turtleneck sweater and ends up as, like, a one-sleeved crop top. And you have no idea how it gets there.
Good fashion words, Chris.
Right? I was pretty impressed with that.
That's pretty good. Hashtag free Padme, hashtag let Padme wear clothes.
I know.
So is the title one sleeve crop top?
I hope so. Chris's one sleeved crop top.
Yes. Oh my god. Anyway. Oh, we're all off topic.
Not us.
What?
That seems weird. I know. We're usually so listenable.
I know. Oh, Jesus. All right, I'm just going to let Keeks talk now about Vi, since he wants to wax poetic about this narrator we've got here.
Thank you. I did kind of already, but I think she's a badass. We kind of see her when I was trying to think of what I could compare her to, I'm like, she's kind of like a subcontractor for the Rebellion.
Yeah. Right? Which is interesting. Sure. Like, we never really, we've never really seen that before. It's very interesting.
Well, that's how she describes herself to Cardinal.
Yeah.
Was I the only one who was suspicious of that?
Oh. What?
I guess I was. I kind of read it as like
her line.
She is wholly part of the resistance, but that's just kind of who she is.
Sorry, I keep using resistance and rebellion interchangeably, and I know they're different things, and I don't care.
I mean, you were the last Jedi, so it's fine.
I was gonna say, you guys know what the fuck I'm talking about. So do our listeners. So does everyone.
or they don't, but they're okay with it, and hence keep listening.
Yes.
Oh God.
Yeah, I think that's up for debate. Let's talk about that more in the wrap up, because that's interesting. When she said that to Cardinal, I thought that meshed well with her, the kind of backstory that we actually get, where she's like knitting on the ship, which I thought was very cute.
Yes, might be my favorite opening to a Star Wars novel.
I don't even think we know what she looks like at all. Do we get any physical description of her?
We do. She is black and her hair is bleached blonde.
Great. Well, and she has amber eyes on hers. Oh, perfect. Well,
there's also,
yes please.
Keeks, if you Google her, there's pictures of her, because the different versions of the book came with posters of different characters, and so like the Barnes and Noble one that we have has a poster of Cardinal. I want to say it was the Target version has a poster of Vi.
Okay, thanks.
So you can look at your new girlfriend.
Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Oh my god. Yeah, for once she's not problematic. for once I pick someone to crush on who's not totally problematic.
Hey.
Not blue too.
One in a row.
But
is that one in a row for not problematic or one in a row for not blue?
Can you shut
probably
up?
Both.
Oh man.
Anyway, it doesn't matter. But I mean, we obviously get that Leia trusts her, because she just like calls her up and is like, hey, you're like in the neighborhood over there. Can you do the thing and go see what's going on? We have a feeling there's some fuck shit going on. And we don't know what it is and we want to know more. And she was like, okay. And she just like zip zaps over because she's a good spy. And then she gets captured. And when we start to see her like getting tortured, we see that she is just like a really fucking good spy, and she does exactly what she's supposed to do. You know, I think she does contemplate killing herself. Or did you guys get to that part yet?
Mm-hmm.
She talks about
the tooth.
It's just the tooth. Yeah. So she has like this our equivalent of like the cyanide tooth in our military, which mm-hmm. I don't think they do anymore. But who knows?
I don't think that's still a thing.
I think something has to still be a thing though.
Yeah, I'm
probably.
Sure.
I don't know. I don't know.
Anyway,
so she like is insanely good at like keeping her composure when she's getting fucking tortured, and but also like hard playing Cardinal and like playing him for like the long game, and still trying to like gather as much information as she can while staying alive, while trying to like, she's just so flawlessly, I think. Looking at every angle of like this interrogation, like one, she wants to get as much information out of him as she can. Two, she wants to like kind of psychoanalyze him to help with all of that. And three, she wants to get out of there alive with as much info as she can. And I think it's just, she's just super competent. And she's a very cool character, I thought.
Also, can we just have a moment for like the, while you're in the neighborhood, in the fucking unknown regions, this fucking uncharted space.
I know, Leia's like,
while you're wandering around off the edge of the map, can you like check this out?
Yeah, Leia's like, can you just pick up some milk on your way home? Thanks.
Yeah, let's act surprised that Leia's just like, can you do this really super dangerous thing? Thanks.
Just real quick for us. Thanks.
But anyway, that's all I wanted to say. I just wanted to wax poetic about how badass she is for a while.
No, it's great to especially see a female character of color just be that calculating up against, you know, your pretty much your standard like white male stormtrooper leader dude.
If she doesn't die, you can put her in a fucking movie, Lucasfilm, you pieces of shit. Sorry.
Word. No, you're not wrong, honestly.
I was going to say, are we going into this episode or no?
Oh, God. Hey.
I'm too tired. Maybe later. Maybe
yes.
This week.
Yes. One of the things I did really enjoy was we get a lot of this, the book from Vi's point of view, but towards the end of the section that we read, we get a little bit from Cardinal's point of view, and it's really fun how they think they're playing each other. Like, they're just, like, Cardinal's just like, I gotta, like, milk this information out of her, and, you know, and I kind of like her. Like, she seems like, you know, if only she weren't Rebel Scum, she'd be a cool person. Whereas Vi's just like, as you said, how much information can I pull out of this guy? Can I even possibly turn him? And it really just seems like she's a lot smarter than him, even though he thinks he's doing a great job, and it just made me laugh really hard.
I know, he was like, I'm such a good interrogator. And I'm like, no, honey, oh, honey, no.
I know, like, rule number one of interrogation, you interrogate the person for information, you don't fry them to a crisp until they die right off the bat.
And then feed them. Sorry.
Okay, so I think we wanted to talk a little bit about literary things, but I have no idea who wrote this first point that is completely wrong.
Oh, that was me. I was in the waiting room in the hospital and tired.
Well, Chris wrote, how does the first person writing make this feel like a different story? And I'm like, this is not first person.
Okay, it wasn't first person, but like the, it's like, it's very close third person.
It's, okay, so it's close third, especially in the present, the chapters that are in present day, following Vi and Cardinal around the Absolution. On the Parnassus chapters, we get Vi telling the story that Siv told her about Phasma.
And that's what I was referring more to the storytelling device of a direct retelling from Vi to us about a different story that was not her own.
Right. And I mean occasionally she like will throw in her own opinion and stuff like that, but it's not really a first person story.
No, I know. I'm conceding the point that I was wrong. That's what I was talking about.
Sure. White man.
Kate, what I was actually saying was,
oh my god. But yeah, no, it's a really interesting literary device that I don't think I've honestly seen something like this since I read like Jane Eyre. So it's a kind of an old fashioned way of telling a story in terms of novel writing, and it's a, because of that, it's kind of a risky move. But yeah, this is really a story in a story, and of course Vi and Cardinal are acting as framing devices. And I obviously we've only read a quarter of the book, but what I'm really interested in seeing is what this book specifically can tell us about storytelling itself in the Star Wars galaxy, and legend and canon, because the way that Vi is telling the stories, of course, she's telling Cardinal what Siv told her, so she's several degrees removed from the immediate situation, the immediate events of Phasma's life, and so it takes on the air of legend, because, you know, when you're talking about legends, you don't actually know these people. You just know about all the cool shit they did. So it's interesting.
Yeah. And to me, it was just very, it felt very dark and very, I hate this term, but it felt very gritty.
Oh, my favorite word.
Your favorite word to describe white sports players always.
Oh my God.
Just hard worker, really gritty. Really gets the job done. But no, God.
I need more Vicodin.
But no, it felt very, like, it did. It felt very gritty. It felt very, I'm trying to find ways to describe it that aren't dark or gritty.
Please describe it.
As dark and gritty. Also gritty.
I know, just say gritty 10 more times.
No, but it
full of sand.
It felt, yeah, right? It felt much more serious. It felt like the life and death aspect of Phasma's story felt a lot more real to me. I don't know, like, maybe this was just me. I'd love to hear y'all's perspective on it as well. But to me, it felt much more serious as a story because of the way it was told. It felt much more like, this isn't, you know, this is a Star Wars story. It's fun. And like, everyone's going to be okay, even though we know that not everyone is always okay. But it felt much more like, The quest hangs on the edge of a knife, like, you know.
Right, like, right. I mean, you know, it's one of those things where Vi could die at any moment. Cardinal could just decide, you know, fuck this. Anyone in Phasma, obviously Phasma doesn't die because she lives to The Last Jedi. But, you know, anyone in her band could die at any moment in any number of horrible ways because Parnassos is hell on Earth. And on top of that, the settings are really dark and kind of disgusting. Like, the interrogation room on the Absolution is in the belly of the Star Destroyer, and Vi describes it as being dark and creepy, and literally no one ever goes down there, and the interrogation room smells like blood, so that's comforting. And then you have the Sire, which is literally just made of, like, dark stone pillars, and it feels like it's always, like, it sounds, the way it's described, it sounds like it's always fucking raining, and it's always cloudy, so basically it's Portland. And it's true. And it's just horrible. Like, all of it feels horrible. All of it is very ominous and oppressive. And, you know, just, yeah, I totally agree with that. It's creepy.
Yeah, and I think we'll probably talk about this more in the wrap-up. The kind of heavy-handedness of the tone didn't really bother me, just because I think, like, especially I think when you guys finish it, you'll be like, ah, yes, this thing, horribleness. But, yeah, obviously, like, it is very heavy-handed, but, I mean, it's very much, like, it's framed and told very much like a survivor story, which is we have definitely not seen in Star Wars before. And that's kind of like what my point was that I put on the outline, is like, this is definitely not something we've seen previously. I mean, like, survival is always there in the background whenever we're talking about Star Wars, especially in, like, the early rebellion and, you know, people just try, literally, you know, Ezra and Rey and any number of orphans, like, day-to-day life, like, stealing just to get by, blah, blah, blah.
Totally.
But this, like, this takes on a totally different tone when we hear that, like, the technology isn't really developed. And it's not like you can just, like, go down to some kind of marketplace and steal a bread, even though that's, like, difficult. But that's, you know, that's not something that's ever going to be a reality for this. And that's why I think it feels so starkly different. I'm a huge, like, survival story fan. So, of course, I like this book and no one else does. But this is, like, when I liked The Hatchet in the sixth grade. No one else did.
So. Oh, I'm really enjoying it so far.
Okay, good.
Oh, Keeks, you're so great. I've never actually read The Hatchet.
Oh, you should read it. It's a quick read.
You sure?
It's why
I feel like I did and blocked it out.
I'm sure you did. Medicine Walk, The Hatchet, any number of like survival growth books that every person in any of my classes were like, how did you enjoy this? I read one page of it and then decided not to read it. It's like, oh, I loved it.
Oh my god.
It's like page turner for me.
You're fantastic.
That's how I felt about the bell jar.
Oh my god. Okay, that's because you're...
What's wrong with you?
I had a terrible teacher.
Also, you were not up on...
I was
on,
rude as hell.
You were not hip with the mental health shit back in the day, and therefore you were rude as hell about Sylvia Plath.
No, that's accurate. I'm not denying that. I just didn't enjoy that book.
That's great, Chris. Do you want to tell us more about this book that is completely fucking unrelated to anything we're talking about, even the genre?
I started it, just to be fair.
Oh my god.
But... yeah, I mean, I super enjoyed the book, and I read it already, and I think, like, a character as unique and interesting as Phasma, and we really, I mean, as little as we get about her in the two movies that we saw her in, I think this was, like, a really befitting origin story. So, I don't know. Whether or not anybody likes it, I hope that that's the side we all come out on, just because I think... she's fucking badass, and I'm glad that we get to hear all about it.
Oh, sure. And, you know, the extended universe in Star Wars at this point never hurts from having different kinds of perspectives and literary styles incorporated. Like, I really do enjoy just the fact that people are taking risks with how they're telling all these stories, which I think is absolutely fantastic. But, of course, as we know, when this book came out, it was extremely polarizing in the fandom for a number of reasons, some of which were legitimate and some of which were super not, because people, whiny fanboys hate Phasma for a lot of reasons that we can dismiss out of hand because they're stupid. But yeah, I look forward to talking about that on the wrap up, just the different reactions around the fandom and then how we felt about it.
Yeah, I was going to say it's been pretty polarizing within the pod so far.
We're not saying anything about that right now. I need to. Yeah. Anyway.
Kate needs to finish the book. I should finish the book too.
Yeah.
To be fair.
Yeah. Yeah. At Real Baby Bird finished the friend of the pod. Of finished course. The book in like one sitting because she's like the world's fastest reader. It's so annoying.
Oh but my God. I wish
I like. Yeah. Oh my God. Same. She was like, I started Phasma and I finished it. I was like, what the fuck?
Nice.
Miranda.
We're going to slow down.
Oh my God.
But anyway, I can't wait to actually also try to gather questions from her as I often do, since she will never actually engage with us directly.
Right? Seriously. Calling you out.
Yet she has co-hosted one time while you were fucking dying cosplay closing.
Yeah.
Oh,
which is now done. I finished my tunic today. It's great.
Yeah, he's pretty much done.
I'm just waiting for Chris's fashion episode. I'm done. I'm mostly done with the soft parts. Now I just need to finish. I need things to come in the mail.
Yes.
Woo!
But anyway.
Anyway, that pretty much wraps it up. This is a short episode, but short and sweet. It's okay.
It's good.
Yeah. Now that we've actually like started writing things down and stuff, there's a lot less dead air to edit out.
I know. There's a lot less vamping and just being like, what are we talking about?
Now that we have started writing things down?
Okay, fuck. Yeah.
Yeah. I was going to say, there were two people who used to contribute to outlines, and now there are three. Kristen.
Okay, well, and somehow the episodes are shorter, so.
Yeah.
Fuck me, right?
Anyway, well, thank you all for reading along with us and listening to episode 37 of the Book Wars Pod. Next episode, we're going to be continuing with Phasma, reading chapter 14 through chapter 22. If you don't already, please follow us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and Tumblr at Book Wars Pod. Email us if you want to email us, bookwarspod@gmail.com. And to all our new listeners, thank you for joining us.
Welcome, welcome.
Welcome.
Hopefully we haven't scared you the fuck off.
Just I know, right?
Talking endlessly about the drugs I'm on.
Yep, exactly. Well, thank you for listening to us, but B, please rate and review and subscribe to the podcast. You already subscribed, most likely, but rate and review us on iTunes, on Google Play, on Stitcher. It is the best way for people to discover the show, and as of right now, we have very few reviews, so if you are, very few ratings and reviews, so if you could do that, we would all appreciate it.
The best part of iTunes is that you don't even have to, like, write a comment to review things. You can just push the button.
Yeah, just give us how many stars you think. You
and know, then
whatever,
run away.
Whatever, five, whatever, it's fine.
Five or whatever. And if you're coming to us from the Tathi... Oh my god, once again.
Tathi Thaythen.
If you are finding us via the Tashi Station mega feed, is that what we call it?
Correct.
Mega feed, okay, great. See, I'm trying to get the verbiage right. If you're coming to us from the mega feed, give us a little subscribe on the side if you don't mind, because it makes us feel good. It gives us warm and fuzzies, and also we like to talk to you. So come find us and yell at us, and we'll yell right back. We always do.
Exactly. And with that, thank you to Tashi Station Radio, our parent network. Our theme song is Whiz Bang by Poddington Bear. Our logo and artwork are by Jovi Terra Design. And thanks to you for listening to episode 37 of the Book Wars Pod. For Kate and Kristen, I'm Chris, and we will talk to you next week.
Hold on, I'm going to... not going to sneeze. I'm going to pretend to sneeze, and then it's going to go away. sorry.
That was adorable.